tell if a bullet or a rope will be my head. Got a price upon my head, the same alive or dead. There ain't no resting for a warning man.
Hey there, kids, and welcome to yet another edition of Wanted Alive or Preferably Dead. Kicking off our second year, I think, yeah, this is our second year.
Mm-hmm.
Yippee!
Yay!
Yay, mofos. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm Steven, and of course with me again this month, as every month, from the Garden State, Mr. Von Kohlmeyer. How's it going, Von?
How are we all doing? Yeehaw.
Everything is peachy.
Awesome.
And this month, since we're starting a new thing, we're going to be talking about some weird Western books, and we got a weird Western movie. So anything we need to discuss before we jump into it, my man?
No, I don't think so. I don't know, we have anything wild we have to talk about? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so, since
cool.
Mike's not here to mock him. So
sure. Yeah, definitely. Thank God.
So you want to start with the book or the movie, my man?
Why don't we start with the book?
All right, so D.B. Rooks, Callous and Crow, The Wayward Something Chronicles, Volume 1.
Wow, okay.
Callous and Crow, it's The Wayward Something, and I left my e-reader in the other room, so
yeah.
All right,
pull it up on my thing, it doesn't let me see the fucking cover from 1-6. The Wayward World Chronicles.
Yeah, The Wayward World Chronicles, Volume 1.
Mm-hmm.
Callous and Crow by D.B. Rook from Jolly Old England. And this one, I wasn't sure what I was getting into with this one because I didn't know anything other than the title, and it was about a vampire. And I'm going to start with what I didn't like and get that out of the way.
Okay.
Because there was so much I did like, I'd rather just get the negative out of the way.
Sure.
So the thing with this book is it's told in kind of, I think the word is epistolatory format, kind of like Carrie or Dracula, where it's snippets of different books and articles and things all kind of put together to make up the story. It uses a lot of that format, but then at the same time, it's also a lot of first person and third person, but it kind of keeps switching between narrators.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a little confusing to me. And I know it was confusing because even the author like messed up a couple times where I'd be like, okay, I thought this was Crow talking, but he's talking about Crow. And then I'd flip back a couple pages like, okay, I was right. The author kind of messed up a couple times.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, especially in those, when you get out of those little introductions to each chapter where it's like it's a letter from somewhere, or it's a newspaper article or something like that, or you know, something where it's like it's kind of explaining something else that's going on within the background of the whole over story. And I was like, okay. And then when he starts going into things, it's like, who's who? So I was a little confused by that. Yeah, I can agree with you on there.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be so bad. He would switch points of view like in the middle of a scene. So like Callous and Crow are running from somebody, and he'd switch in the middle of the scene, and like it's like, okay, unless there is something like, if you're switching points of view, here's my thoughts on it.
Right.
I don't know what D.B. Rook was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's his story, and but my way of thinking is you don't switch points of view unless you're switching to a character point of view that is going to offer something from a unique perspective that only that character can convey.
Sure.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get you.
And so really either one of the characters could have been told from either character's perspective a lot of the times.
Right.
And so he chooses to switch between them, and it doesn't offer anything new.
Yeah.
That being said, and my other little, you know, just a nitpicky thing, and this happens, trust me, with every single self-published author.
Sure.
Grammar, grammatical mistakes, punctuation mistakes, those get past you.
Yeah.
I mean, I reread mine. I had a friend of mine proofread mine. And then like a year later, while I was recording the audiobook, I was finding typos and I was like, how the fuck did we miss this? Like four readings and still miss this. So, you know, it happens. So, you know, just, I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. You know, you don't have somebody, you don't often have a set of fresh eyes to go in and, you know, catch all these mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, this story starts out with, you kind of think you know where the story is going.
Right.
You know, you've got Callus, who is a vampire,
mm-hmm.
and Crow is a young boy who he kind of adopts after killing his father.
Yeah.
And
like, but not like killing his father, more like kind of like mercy killing his father, I guess you can say. Like he kind of like when you get introduced to that, like why he explains why he took him and everything like that. And he says that his father, you know, his father said that he was better off going with him than staying here. And it's like, okay, sure. That's understandable.
And I really like the way they circled back to this because you really don't find out what the motivations were kind of until the last page, almost the last page of the book.
Sure.
When you find out, okay, this is what the father was thinking all along. And you kind of felt like that was the deal, but you know, it gets clarified for you at the end, which is, I thought was nice. They came full circle with it,
definitely.
But you think this is going to be the story of like two guys, you know, like kind of like a lone wolf and cub thing with a vampire.
Right.
Going out seeking revenge against this preacher who had this Reverend Osset, who had wronged Callus by killing off someone who had shown him some compassion previously.
Yeah.
So you think that's going to be the story. And he starts dropping in these little hints about like, you know, there's a, like one of the little segments is about this kid or this guy collecting seashells and how dangerous it is to go near the ocean. You know, and then a couple chapters later, you find more and more about what's going on with the ocean, why people don't cross the ocean, you know, that kind of stuff. So he drops in these hints and then just builds on them until that those moments pay off. And I got to tell you, this book, what you think is going to be a simple revenge tale.
Yep.
The world building in this was, I found pretty incredible.
Sure.
I mean, he threw in so many fucking ideas. It's instead of just like a guy and his kid chasing after revenge.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's that, but there's all this political intrigue and religious movements and other religious movements. And you think the priest is the bad guy, but you know, it turns out he's got his own fucking conflicts going on with other people across the ocean, and there are people chasing Callus and Crow, and you think maybe they're chasing him on the behest of Osset.
Yeah.
It turns out he doesn't know anything about it. I mean, and there's just so many creative ideas in there. Like,
right.
I don't really give away a whole lot.
No, not at all.
But it goes from being, it has the Western elements, of course, but the steam, like a lot of steampunk style elements, to pure fantasy, to this kind of mixture of like, you know, occult sciences.
Yeah.
And just, it's just idea after idea after idea.
Yeah, definitely.
And it there's enough in here. He could have stretched this book out to be two or three books.
Oh yeah, definitely. And like when you sent me the book and I was like, ugh, it was like 300 and something pages. I was like, okay, holy shit. And yeah, it definitely leaves to a lot of like open leaves. When you automatically see the cover of the book says book, like volume one or chapter, you know, book one, it's like, okay, well, he's definitely got an eye mindset of like, this is not the only story he's writing with these two characters in mind. So it's like, and you can definitely tell it's a first time writer. He's kind of he's throwing everything at the wall that he can think of. That's like, oh, this is fucking great. I love this. Fuck, do this. And just like kind of, you know, trinkling them in there, but there's enough kind of going on where you're like, which direction will he take? Like I know he's going to keep with these characters, but who's going to be like the big adversary for the next book and then the book after that? Like you were saying with like the Lone Wolf and Cub thing, that's how those movies write and the mangas write how it is. It's like you're following this one character and there are multiple factions trying to get these characters. right? And each book kind of goes in its own direction, but it's ultimately these two characters trying to get to the, you know, the big bad. You know, but they have an idea who they know who the big bad is and who they're searching for for the end of the book. And this book, it doesn't, you know, it feels like it's going one way, and then it turns and twists and goes, and then we get new Pete with this and that, and it's like, what the okay, cool. And I kind of like that. I did agree with you with the whole fact that, like, when you are reading certain things, it does feel like it's like, okay, wait. We're talking about this character for a second, and then we know we're still talking about the same character, but he's using the wrong. Like, oh, but then it's like a first time book. It's a first write. It's his first book. I give him a pass for that. You know what I mean? Like, I give anybody who's got the balls to sit there and self publish a book like this or any kind of book and go, you know, and they're doing as much like when you put out your first book, it was like, you know, I was like, all right, if there's anything wrong with it, any, you know, nicks and niches and all that other shit, it's like, I gotta, you know, he doesn't have a fucking proofreader to read it. He's probably giving it to multiple people to check it and make sure it works and everything runs around properly. And it's, I think it's a solid book to start this whole little monthly book excursion that we're going to be doing from now on. But yeah, like I like the fact that it was a vampire. I was like, okay, it's cool. Again, the whole kind of you know, the,
well, and the interesting thing about it is he didn't take that kind of one of the things that typically happens with a vampire is they've got the super strength and they're almost invulnerable. And this guy, he has his doubts as a character. I mean, as a
He's not omnipotent.
He's not invulnerable. He's not omnipotent. He has his own doubts and fears. He's afraid of the water, so that causes him to, like, you know, have some doubts when he's in certain situations. Yeah, and I guess if there's one trope in this book, it's like he gets his ass kicked and thrown imprisoned probably like five times in the course of this book. I mean,
he's not like this fucking huge, like, hulking character that people there's a fear to it, but it's like, yeah, he gets his ass handed to him and it's like, okay, cool. It's like,
yeah, multiple occasions.
I kind of like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's nice to see that he went with the, it basically humanizes a character. This is a character, you know, questioning whether or not he has a soul at the end. And just to humanize the monster character.
Sure.
Always liked that take. I mean, that's what made, like, the James Whale version of Frankenstein so great was, you know, it, you know, gave humanity to the monster, and it really does a great job with this. And like I said, some of the ideas are just so creative, like the way that, like, the materials, I mean, there's a whole process of how, like, they mine certain things and how the ship works when they do have to go across the sea. You know, there's, like, tubes that, like, the little, the slaves crawl through to get to the inner workings of the ship. Just creative idea after creative idea. Mm-hmm. How this drug is manufactured, how the metal is manufactured, how they, you know, create these mystical beings. I mean, just idea after idea after idea. And every one of them is solid and interesting. And another thing is, his prose is solid. He has his command of the English language. It's not like reading, you know, fan fiction where it's like, okay, this guy passed an English class. This guy can write. And definitely. So that makes it much more enjoyable when you're reading something where, you know, you don't have to question whether or not the guy is even knows what words mean when he's using them.
Sure. Definitely.
First time out, I guess we're in agreement on this.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. When you put this idea out there, I was like, oh fuck. And especially like, I know like a lot of these books are going to
I've heard you read.
Shut up. You've heard me repeat sentences, not read, sir. Anyway, but like, and a lot of these books are going to be independently made and stuff like that, independently published. So it's like, you kind of, you know, give or take. But we know a lot of people who were who published their own works over the years. So it's like I'm always kind of game for that stuff, and I'm always more interested in that kind of thing because I think that the kind of the mainstream writing public is kind of just very, you know, they have their niche and they kind of run with it. And all the guys we know who've written books and you know, put things out have always been in kind of different realms of horror and the weirdness. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of game. Yeah, I was kind of, I bitched you about the amount of pages, and I was like, I think even the, the second book you want us to read is something is a bigger one too.
Is it?
I don't know. Fucking didn't.
That's not that long.
No, it's 200 something pages. 600 something pages.
Yeah, these are big pages though.
Yeah, 16,000 pages.
Yeah, it's about 250. So
see, there, yeah, no, it's not that long.
But there's pictures, I think.
Oh, there's pictures.
So that takes 15 pages out of there.
Oh, and it's in Newark. Nice, sweet.
It's in Newark.
Well, I'm looking through it. The opening page says Newark, New Jersey.
Like, I'll be damned.
Sweet, look at that.
This might be about you.
Yeah, probably is my fucking family. Bunch of fucking monsters they are. but yeah, I enjoyed this. We kind of got this when it was kind of free. Because at the time I guess he had a deal with Amazon for the Kindle. But I think if you look on Amazon, if you're paying for the subscription, if you're paying for their services, I think through Kindle Unlimited, it's free. I think you get it through there. So if you're paying the exorbitant amount of price for all of Prime, you get it. But I think the paperback is like $13 or under $13. So it's kind of a steal for the amount of pages it is.
Oh yeah.
And it's like I said, it's a good first time book. I want to see what he goes with it and the direction he goes with it. Like, you know, so, and I know these things do take time because, you know, you're not being paid by a company, you're pretty much being paid by how many books or how many, you know, downloads you get. And it pretty much becomes like a, just like for you, it becomes like a, you know, like this is what I love to do and this is what I want to do. So if I can get a small, you know, a small community, I can get them to continue buying the books and I continue making those books for them, which is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm definitely on board to see where this is going next because uh-huh. He does. I mean, while he wraps up this part of the story,
sure.
He this is a setup for a continuing series, and yeah. I'll probably have to reread it because, like I said, there's just so much going on.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I'll probably have to reread it when the second one finally comes out, and I will find out because I told him I'd let him know when we put this episode out.
Okay.
So I'll find out. When he's planning on getting the next one out to see if
cool.
He can get a hint anyway, because I know these things take time. But,
definitely.
But yeah, so you say you have the book in front of you? Do you have the ebook in front of you?
I do.
Turn to the last page here, and if you would, and what is his website? It's DB, I think it's DB Rook Books. .com maybe, but don't wear a lie.
I'm a fucking old ass.
Yeah, get your
it
glasses.
It is dbrookbooks.com.
Yes. All right. Yeah, dbrookbooks.com. And I know he's on Twitter and Facebook as well. Yeah, as
DB_Rook on Twitter and dbrookbooks on Facebook.
Yeah, so be sure and check him out. And like I said, I think we're both in agreement here. This is definitely getting a recommend from us. It was a good time. And mm-hmm. I'm definitely looking forward to see where he goes with this because he's got a lot of oars in the water there. And
yes, he does.
Love to see how it pays off.
Definitely.
So, two recommends for Callous and Crow, The Wayward World Chronicles, Volume 1. And for next month, we've chosen... Well, I've chosen. You didn't need to say in it.
But, nope.
Next month, Voodoo Cowboys, The Life, Death, and Resurrection of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid by Gene O'Neill and Gord Rollo.
Yeah.
So we'll be doing that in 3 or 4 weeks.
Yes, sir.
All right. So in the meantime, we do have a movie to talk about. And we pull
yes,
up
we
my...
do. Yes, we do. The Alex Turner directed 2004 film Dead Birds, which, you know, when I saw the cover for this, I was like, oh, I've seen that before. And I probably have, because it's probably been in like the $5 bin of a Best Buy over the years. And it's like, and it's kind of like you overlook it, right? It's like, because that is some janky ass fucking, and it's like, you don't expect it. And like, and like I said, I've seen the cover of this, and it's like, this is no fun. And it's like, eh, whatever. And you find out, oh, it's a Western. It's like, oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd never know from looking at the movie poster, for sure.
Yeah.
It's just, and it's one of those that I've had laying around here for
hundreds of years,
probably 2 or 3 years. And
yeah,
when basically I was looking for a horror Western that we hadn't seen, hadn't talked about like personally. So we're to, you know, not cover old territory with this. So, so this is one I landed on. It gave me an excuse to watch it. And so a little bit about this one.
Yeah, please.
Like you said, it's directed by Alex Turner, and this was his debut feature.
Yeah.
Starring E.T.'s Henry Thomas, Patrick Fugit.
Yep.
Nikki Acox, who I just found, she passed away a couple, like just 2 years ago. She was really young, died of
she's
cancer.
Really young. Yeah.
The great Michael Shannon, who's great in everything he does.
And like a role prior to actually exploding in the stratosphere.
Yeah, this is an early one for him.
Yeah.
Mark Boone Jr. of Sons of Anarchy fame.
Yep, which I was like very happy to see him pop up in this film. And I was like,
I just love that guy. Dude, he's just fucking great and wonderful.
Yeah, it's like, he doesn't change his look for shit and just keeps getting fucking roles of some kind of side guy who gets killed off in the first 20 minutes. And you're like, ah, whatever. It's fucking nice to see him. And then like Isaiah Washington's in this film.
Yeah, and if there's going to be a black guy running around with Confederates, it's going to be Isaiah Washington.
Yeah,
he's a little bit of a right wing nut.
Yep.
And let's see, and then nobody else.
Yeah, it's pretty much it. That's the core cast. And this is a film where, yeah, like Henry Thomas was kind of like making like a weird revival. He had never stopped working. Right. From like when he was doing E.T. and The Quest and Cloak and Dagger when he was a kid to the films he's making. You know, he still makes films today. It's just I think like his kind of, you know, his MO for actually trying to like get into a bigger film at this time was like, I'll just take whatever I can get. And, you know, he is the main name of the film. He's got the most he's pretty much carrying this film. And then what is it? Patrick Fugate was another actor at the time, who was a bigger name than he is now, in 2004. Like when I saw this and I was like, and I saw Michael Shannon at the end and I was like, oh, what year is this made? And I checked and I was like, oh, okay. So it was like pre Shotgun Stories and pre the films he did with Werner Herzog. And I was like, okay, so that makes sense. But like the great thing about Michael Shannon is that he'll do stuff like this. Like he kind of did his time in the indies in the early 2000s, but like he still digs himself back into the indies every once in a while. He was in a film, I'm trying to remember, 2 or 3 years ago. That was like really a weird indie film that's on Shudder right now. It's called, why can't I find it? Oh, it's called Night's End, which was okay. And he pops up like as a small character, the husband of the guy of our main lead's ex-wife. Like it's a strange little film. But when I saw him, I was like, what the fuck's he doing in this thing? It's like this teeny fucking movie. And I was like, okay, it's nice to see him still popping up in the films and stuff like that.
You gotta love the, I mean, I just love it when and Bruce Willis used to be this way. He, like a big hit and then do some like, bullshit movie for scale.
Mark Boone Jr. We talking about. Yeah, he's a guy who pretty much, if you look at his CV, it's just like, he's in pretty much everything. Like, he's in a film I really love called Wrist Cutters, A Love Story.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
It's a great fucking film. But then he's in like everything. He's in, you know, he's in different versions of A Mice of Men. He's in fucking Memento. He's in the Batman, the Nolan Batman movies. He's in Seven. Like he pops up in every fucking thing. And you're like, and he's very, you know, he's a very reminiscent dude. He's a small kind of cheerbrick dude with a big beard or goatee and long hair. And he just looks rugged. I think wasn't he in Sons of Anarchy? I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. That's where I first saw him. And
yeah,
it was just like, I mean, he was such a great, well, first off, he's such a great actor, and that character in Sons of Anarchy was freaking awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was kind of like the perfect role for him. He looks that part, biker part so perfectly.
Definitely.
But getting into this story, what you have is a bunch of Confederates who rob a bank and kill a bunch of people. These guys have gone AWOL.
Yeah.
And Nikki Acox is Annabelle. She's kind of like the girlfriend of Henry Thomas, who you know, basically she plays her role in, you know, distracting.
She's like the mother of the group, if you really look at it, because like, yeah, she is the one who's kind of having a sexual relationship with the Henry Thomas character, but she's ultimately kind of taking care of all these guys, like, you know, cleaning up their wounds and fucking, you know, babying them and shit like that.
You know.
But yeah, she's definitely in a relationship with Henry Thomas's character. And yeah, you say they kill a bunch of people in the bank. They massacre everyone in that fucking bank. It's like, it's such a gnarly opening sequence. Like, and I was like, okay. Like, and it's because they're getting unionist gold that's being left in this, that's being put in this bank.
It was other Confederates that dropped off the gold.
Was it? I thought the unionists, at the end. The unionists are the ones looking for them at the end of the film. So they kind of go rogue, right? They kill everybody in the place, including like, you know, including just people who have no business they're doing normal business and they just get massacred.
It was like, okay, flat out murdered the teller for no fucking reason whatsoever. Yeah.
And she's got a big smile on her face about it too. So they're not people who really particularly care about life or limb. They're on a mission to get this gold and kind of split it up between themselves and kind of get out of the country.
And the plan's to get to Mexico, but they decide to spend the night at a spooky house.
Yeah, a spooky plantation house. As they pass by it. And number one, the first thing when you're going to, you know, stay the night at a spooky plantation and you see a skinned monster or animal running at you full speed, you shoot it dead and it just looks really off. Maybe you should rethink about that. Hey, let's continue on to the house. It's like, 'cause that thing came from the house. And it looks like something something out of your nightmares. It's like, what the fuck is that thing? And they can't even explain what it is. And they're looking at it,
it might be a boar or a dog or something, but something skinned it. And it's like, yeah, there's a freaking skinless monster running around, and that's not going to give you pause.
Sure.
And then you come across the scarecrow who may or may not be a corpse.
That
doesn't give you pause.
No.
And it, there's a lot of these little tropes, like, okay, they come across the scarecrow and it's like, okay, yeah, that's not going to pay off later. And then like when they're exploring the old dilapidated house that's been abandoned, you know, there's the one door that will not open, even though it's not locked.
No,
That's not going to pay off later.
No, so
they set up all the tropes that you'd expect in this kind of thing. And it does kind of play out like you'd expect. You've got a group of people in a big old mansion that's been abandoned. They find a book in the barn that it's basically looks like the Necronomicon Ex Mortis, you know, it's a bunch of like drawings of, and it's got blood splattered all over it. It's like, yeah, that's not going to, yeah. And one of the guys even I think one of the guys even said, yeah, Isaiah Washington says, yeah, this is about the spells for resurrecting the dead. Like, people just know that.
Great.
But yeah, there's some weird shit going on.
Yeah.
And then you add in the skinned monster that attacked you when you first arrive.
Right. And then it's raining. So we automatically got that in there. And just like, it's a lot of like boxes get checked off and you're like, uh-oh. Like, and it's like, it's also, you have the group of guys and the woman who are all pretty much, you know, they're doing this for a reason, but they all have their inner motives of why they want the gold.
Yeah, they don't trust each other.
Not at all. They don't trust each other at all.
And yes, like, especially Michael Shannon, because like, he's the racist of the group. And yeah. You know, he doesn't want Isaiah Washington having, you know, getting equal share of the gold.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, you know, taking turns watching the gold to make sure none of the others, you know, try to steal any of it.
Yeah.
And of course, what happens is exactly what you'd expect to happen. People start dying one by one. They start getting picked off. Creepy shit starts happening.
Yep.
You know, there's these creepy kids running around, even though the house is abandoned. And you get, you know, people go outside and of course they don't come back. And it's everything you would expect from this.
Yeah.
And so in that respect, it is kind of like, you know, a by the numbers, you know, horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, what I did like about this is they don't really, you know, lay everything out.
Yeah.
They'll like give you a flashback to this part, or you know, when Henry Thomas first met Annabelle in the hospital.
Right.
And the guy that told them about this mansion was in love with Annabelle. So, you know, and he thinks they're going to get married when he gets out of there, but instead he dies.
Yeah.
But he's turned them on to this place for some reason. And, you know, then you find out later, okay, you know, you kind of have to put it together yourself that,
yeah,
he set them up, even though he knew he was going to die. He wasn't going to be able to get Annabelle, but Henry Thomas was. So, you know, he's going to fuck him over. Oh, yeah, I know this great place you can hide out.
Yeah.
Yeah, trust me on this. Before I die, I'm going to let you know about this place. And, you know, you can hide out there. It's no problem.
Uh-huh.
And then so gradually you get these flashbacks of what happened, but you don't get it all in like one chunk. There's not these big exposition dumps or anything like that.
Yep.
You get these little hints, and even at the end, by the end of the movie, you still don't know exactly, you know, how it all played out. You've got a pretty good idea and you've got to fill in some of the blanks yourself.
Yeah.
But I really liked that there wasn't nobody sat down and told the whole story, you know, like would normally happen at about the 3/4 point of this, of these kind of movies.
Yeah.
Somebody sits down and says, oh, well, this monster and blah, blah, blah. And this person did that and that released this and all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get any of that.
No.
Which I thought was really great, which made it much, much more compelling.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a certain things, yeah, that I wasn't particularly in love with, but like, I like the fact that it kind of, it didn't handheld you through the whole story. I mean, there's like that weird moment near the end where it's like, okay, we're going to explain to you what happened in this house before our people got there, which is kind of a strange, like, just kind of like out of nowhere, but it kind of works. And I like how like slowly but surely, and like, you know that like Harry Thomas's character and the Inget character are both been shot, so they're dealing with their wounds and whatnot. So this, like, especially with Patrick Inget's character, he doesn't know if he's hallucinating from the pain.
Oh, Patrick Fugit.
Fugit, sorry.
Yeah.
He doesn't know if he's hallucinating from the pain from being shot in the chest, or he's just, you know, he's seeing these things for real, but he's starting to see things inside the house. He sees the weird kids under the fucking under the beds. And like, he's the one who first starts coming across things. You have Michael Shannon character, who's just fucking, you know, he is obsessed with getting his part of that gold. And when he disappears, you're like, where the fuck did he go? And then when you get the reveal of what happened to him, it's like, oh, you know, there's a couple of things I didn't particularly care for. Like, you know, it's an early 2000s film. So you have that early CG stuff. Which kind of sucks. Like the some of there's some scenes where they shoot things where it's just it looks like paint, like you know, like pretty much like Photoshop paint on things, and it's like, but then you could see that they spent their money on some kind of visual effects that actually worked out good. I didn't mind the weird faces on most of the, you know, the kind of possessed people in the film. I kind of thought that was kind of neat. And like the jump scares, I wasn't particularly, I've never been a big fan of jump scares, so it's like. But you, I kind of expected it from a film like this because I have to kind of progress somehow. You know, it's, you know, kind of, okay, we're going to fuck you here, fuck you here, fuck you here. It's like, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, but the one thing I did, there's one with Isaiah Washington, speaking of jump scares, where he, where it, yeah, you're really, it caught me off guard. I mean, it wasn't enough to, you know, make me jump out of my pants or anything, but it did catch me off guard because it wasn't like how it would typically play out. But the others, yeah, you know, you're right. You know, expect, okay, if I'm looking under the bed or if I'm backing up, then yeah, I'm going to back up into something.
Something's gonna be there, yeah.
Yeah, so you know, those kind of things. And but I think there's only two or three instances of that throughout the movie.
It's not
So it
too
wasn't
bad.
too well, yeah, it wasn't too bad. And the effects, yeah, some of them were absolutely fabulous, and then others, like where there's Isaiah Washington does go to, finally makes it into the room, the locked room, and goes down to the basement, and there's a he's talking to the slave who was tied up, and like, you know, she's like, oh, he's here, and then all of a sudden her stomach kind of like cuts itself open, and is like, okay,
Yeah, but
yeah, it
the thing
catches you
is,
off guard. It's kind of like, okay, and then it's the more you look at it, the jankier it gets.
But then this, when they go back and like explain the story of what happened to the house before they got there, like, you know, before it became abandoned, with the old man kind of reading through the book, and he's and they do the same thing where they when he slices through this person's stomach. And I thought that was actually for the digital effect they were going with, it actually looked pretty good, and it was in the daytime, so it was like, you know, it actually pulled off it pretty well. And I like how it kind of, you know, explains the story of what happened to this place and why this and everything. When you get like Michael Shannon's reappearance in the film, and like that's definitely an appliance on his face and body, like it's not CG, because they start trying to pull it open and stuff like that, because he has somehow become the Scarecrow, and they pull his body down, and his face and his eyes and mouth have been sewed up like really crudely, and then something is. Somebody did something to his chest, so he's also been just kind of sewed up back in his chest. And they
Oh,
start trying
yeah.
to pry at that shit, and you can definitely tell that that was some kind of appliance that they glued to his face. So it's like,
Yeah,
okay.
definitely looked real. And that scene was so messed up. That was probably my favorite scene in the whole movie. It was when they pull him down. It's like, oh shit, they fucked him up.
Yeah, like
And then.
slowly but surely, everybody starts just like people start disappearing. And because this is a, you know, the Thomas is like, you know, the main guy, he's the one who's going to pretty much stay till the end. So it's like it's for him and a couple other people to kind of slowly figure out, like, hey, well, this guy disappeared and this guy's gone. And like when, you know, with Mark Boone Jr.'s character, he's just kind of going around doing like, you know, he's purveying the place. He's kind of doing you know, they have him walking around kind of keeping an eye out, and he sees a, you know, a fucking a well. And he hears a kid calling from the bottom of the well, so he says, "Oh, fuck it!" So he throws a you know, the rope down there to see if he can get it, and as he's trying to pull him, he's like, "What the f? These are fucking heavy as hell!" And the guy, and he just fucking gets pulled right into the well, and you're like, "Oh, that's great, okay, awesome!" Like, and like when I see him on the CV, I was like, "Oh, okay, he's not gonna last more than like the first half hour," but like that's kind of his MO. So it was kind of fun to see him get killed, you know, that because he's just like, "Mother," he's like, "You, how heavy are you?" Like he's like. And he just gets yanked in, and you're like, oh, that's great. Okay, cool. But yeah, like the, you know, like the mix of like it kind of being like the Civil War Evil Dead film. I was kind of like, but like I kind of can overlook that because like you said, this guy's first feature. So it's like you can definitely tell that him and the writer kind of were like, yeah, let's just do what we, you know, throw shit at the wall and see what sticks. And it's like, okay, you know. It's better than some other Evil Dead films that have been done in the last 5 or 6 years, so I'm not complaining about that. But yeah.
I was really surprised considering, yeah, this is a low budget effort, but you do have, I mean, you've got a surprisingly strong cast.
Sure.
The only, I mean, the only thing I really disliked about it is, you know, people, I don't know what it is with sometimes in movies where you forget that people are going to react to things in real life a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to say things, you know, if a kid, a ghost kid materializes in my room,
yeah,
I'm not going to say, oh, hey, you know, what are you doing here? I'm going to be going, what the fuck?
You know, my reaction.
So this, you know, so, and these characters on several, there are several occasions where it's like, nobody would act like that in this situation.
No.
And that kind of shit just bugs the piss out of me because it takes me right out of the scene if somebody's doing, you know, and it's like, okay, well, you know, we need to have, you know, it comes across almost like filler dialogue.
Sure.
And there's several scenes like that where it's like no human person talks like that.
No, you definitely,
especially in these days. Or, you know, in the 1860s, under those circumstances, I know these guys are badasses, but when freaky shit starts happening, you're probably not going to take it in stride. Be like, oh, well, can I help you, little boy? No, fuck no.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in a locked room by myself, and all of a sudden there's a child there who looks like a fucking, you know, hollowed out eyes and shit, and it's like,
definitely, yeah, it's just like, okay,
but it does, and it does kind of end with this twist ending that I'm not going to give away.
No, yeah,
but the twist ending, I was like, okay, yeah, I don't know if it fits, like, you know, into the like kind of lore that he's established, but it was like, okay, you know, since he didn't give us like every single, you know, brick in this story.
Definitely.
Okay, you know, so, okay, what is it that caused that to happen? Does it make sense? Does it not? I don't know, but it was cool. I mean, it was, when it happened, I was just like, holy fuck. And again, it's one of those things that loops around to something we saw earlier. And it's like, holy fuck, I don't know what that means. I don't know how it fits in with the rest of the story. But it was kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely.
So overall, I mean, yeah, it's not a long movie by any stretch. So, you know, I freaking enjoyed it for what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was definitely a much better movie than I was expecting going in. I was expecting this to be, you know, like I said, I put it off watching it for 2 or 3 years now. Obviously was not, you know, chomping at the bit to watch it, but I was pleasantly surprised with the result. You know, I really, you know, it was fun story, and as for a low budget movie, I think it worked on just about every level.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely does. So let's see. You can rent this pretty much any streaming service you are part of. I know there is a DVD out there, which is probably super cheap nowadays. Because, like, I think I mentioned to somebody, and they also, I showed somebody else this, the cover of this, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I remember seeing that fucking on like the budget bin fucking shelves and stuff like that." It's like, yeah. So it's not a bad film. I did enjoy it for the most part. You know, I was kind of walking into it going, seeing the cast going, it's early 2000s. It's definitely like they spent the money on the cast and kind of worked around, you know, filling in everything else around them. So it was pretty cool. So, yeah.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else you want to say about this little gem?
No, not at all.
All right, so next order of business. Let's see if we can get this to work because we finally got a voicemail.
Oh, awesome.
All right, so let's play. Let's see if this works. We're going to try this.
Good.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, we are a couple thousand miles apart, and Yeah, we don't know how. We've never tried this shit. So.
You were doing it all this on Zoom, so if it works, it works. Yeah. If it doesn't, I'll edit it in later.
All right, so here we go.
So you're telling me that you guys do a podcast about country western bands or something? So basically, I missed the episode about Blake Shelton or the one about Luke Bryan. Okay. Does anybody listen to country anymore? Is that what you guys do? What about that small town guy that has a song about, I don't know, I hear it's racist, but I've never heard it. Why would I? Why would I listen to that?
Yeah, you never
Why would I listen to a podcast about country music anyway? Oh, well. Anyways, congrats on 1 year, guys. Bye.
For those of you who don't know, that is our fellow douche cast member, Mike, calling to congratulate us on 1 year of our country western
country podcast. Western podcast.
Yeah, and he's such a retard.
And dumb, because like, yeah, and the people he picks up, they're not country western, they're like pop country. It's like, come on, dude, seriously. It's all the shit his wife. It's all the shit his childhood wife listens to.
Yeah, his child bride.
There's gonna be a lot of Taylor Swift in that house. Oh my god.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the beautiful thing is Mike's such a like right wing nut job that he's probably triggered every time she plays, you know, Shake It Off.
Yeah. Holy shit. Now who's the guy your wife and everybody likes? Jelly Roll? Is he a fucking a country star, isn't he? Country rap, right? Something like that.
I think so. I heard one song and it was like, okay, yeah, I've heard this before and it was all right.
But I see him.
I think everybody in my family went to go see him except for me.
Yeah, I think somebody said, somebody in my job was telling me about him. I'm like, I see him all the damn time because he's this big fucking dude with tattoos all over him. And they're like, yeah, he's like a fucking country star. I'm like, what the fuck kind of country are you doing? Oh, it's like rap. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes fucking so much sense. Like, whatever. Like, he got like acoustic guitars while he's singing about fucking family and life and all that shit. It's like, all right, whatever. That's cool. If he's positive, who gives a shit? I'm like, I don't know. But yeah, yeah,
the
no,
only, we do. The only song I've heard is kind of like traditional, like, is tradition, more traditional, more towards like the Chris Stapleton end of things.
Which right.
Is,
yeah. Okay.
Which is decent, which I love Chris Stapleton, but.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm not into the Luke Bryan and all that bullshit.
No.
I didn't know who Jelly Roll was until my wife said, well, yeah, all the kids are going to go see Jelly Roll because all my kids are grown and they're taking the grandkids. And
yeah,
it's like, seriously,
the whole fucking family, you're like, yeah, nah,
everybody bought tickets to this.
It's like, I got to read a book. I got to go. I'm not going. Yeah, no, sorry.
I will be at home friggin' listening to the fucking Muddy Waters or some shit.
Yeah. I got to record two podcasts this month. I don't have time for that fucking to go to a concert.
Right. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I'm thinking about doing a third.
Oh, God. Fuck? Fucking hell.
Time for that shit.
I know. Jesus. Yeah. But thanks, Mike, for, you know, realizing there's a voicemail line, which is, how did he call us? Do you have what's the number?
Yes, we do have a number, 304-769-9006. That's 304-769-9006. You can call and leave a voicemail, just like our dear friend Mike. Mike, thanks for calling. We love you, even though you're freaking retarded.
Yeah, fucking.
Were you allowed to say retarded? Well, I guess we can say whatever the hell we want.
We're a Western music podcast. We can say whatever we want because that's all they do.
Yeah, so next month is Willie Nelson month.
Oh yeah.
We need to give a longer month to Willie Nelson. We'll do like a Waylon and Willie month in March.
Right. Oh my god. So talking about
mamas,
like,
don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys.
So talking about controversial films of the genre, we're gonna do And God Said It to Cain. Antonio Margheriti Klaus Kinski film. This can be found on Tubi. I don't know the quality on Tubi because I know Tubi, when it comes to Italian films, it's like they somehow get third or fourth generations.
Yeah, and maybe somebody's VHS tape.
Yeah, I was watching some other
server.
But I was watching some other Margheriti film on there, and it was a cloudy ass VHS, and I'm like, And I didn't even realize it was an Italian for the first 2 minutes. And I was like, wait, what the fuck? And I had to go in and fucking find my subtitles and put it on. I was like, oh shit, this is not even in English. I'm like, okay, cool, whatever. But yeah, so it's Scott said Kane, starring the great German whack job Klaus Kinski. And probably what is quoted as one of the darkest Westerns ever made. We will find out that when we talk about the film next month.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it. We've given out our information. You can call us if you'd like. We're always up for any kind of suggestions. So if you'd like to leave a voicemail with suggestions on books or movies, or, you know, who is your favorite modern, you know, cowboy singer? We're all for that. You know, if you want to talk about Tammy Wynette for 3 hours, go right ahead. I think the voicemail cuts off at 3 minutes, but you can keep talking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do all you want.
Tammy Wynette, I just watched the YouTube video about Tammy Wynette, and I don't remember what it was about. It was something messed up. It was talking about how messed up her childhood was and shit. Yeah. And it was like really friggin', there was just like so much there to unpack.
HBO documentary on June Carter that I want to watch. It just came out like last month. And it's, you know, it's specifically about her life, involving Johnny at some point, but mostly about like her upbringing and everything like that, and up to the end of her life and whatnot. So I'm kind of interested in watching that.
What's that on?
I think it's on HBO or Max.
Oh, so, okay, cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because she does tend to get overshadowed.
Yes, by definitely by Johnny.
The legend.
Yeah.
But yeah, gotta love June.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it for this month. We are now going to read books. No, write book. You're writing books. I'm going to read them. There's no way in hell no one wants to hear me write a book. It'd be a fucking coloring book, dyslexic coloring book. Yeah, that'd be fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah, right. But yeah. Thank you for listening, as always. Steven, you have anything else you want to say?
Nothing else, except for if you don't want to use the voicemail and just want to drop an email, it's jafmpodcast@gmail.com.
Sweet.
And so for Vaughn and myself, I guess that's it for this month. We'll see you or hear you, or you'll hear us, in about 3 or 4 weeks.
Sure.
Till then, happy trails, bitches.